Welcome to the CREXI podcast, an insider's look at all things commercial real estate. I'm Yannis Papadakis, business development manager at CREXI and today's host. Each episode, the CREXI team dives into a broad range of topics and conversations with featured experts to investigate trends, educate listeners, and understand the latest industry news in commercial real estate. As the nation's fastest growing online CRE platform, we're excited to provide a window into the inner workings of commercial real estate for this generation and the next. Welcome and thank you all for joining us for this episode of the CREXI podcast, an insider's look at all things commercial real estate. In this show, we cover a broad range of topics that cater to commercial real estate newcomers and industry leaders alike. I'm your host, Yannis Papadakis, Business Development Manager at CREXI, and today we are thrilled to sit down with Rob Finlay, CEO and founder of 30 Capital. A little bit about our guest. Robert J. Finlay, CEO and founder of 30 Capital, has spent more than two decades pushing the boundaries of innovation and technology in commercial real estate. Finlay built a portfolio of commercial real estate and securitized assets, a financial advisory and services firm, an academy for commercial real estate finance and innovation, an asset management and real estate advisory firm, and almost a dozen technology platforms that open access to data management and tools previously available only to institutional and enterprise operators. Finlay is an innovator in the commercial real estate area with roots on Wall Street, and he is an active real estate investor and operator and mentors emerging leaders. Rob, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. And I know we covered a little bit about your background, but I'd love to briefly learn more about your career path and lessons learned along the way. Can you tell us more about where you're from and how'd you first get your start in commercial real estate?
Sure. Well, I actually grew up in New Hampshire, and I grew up in a commercial real estate family. My dad was in commercial real estate. My mom was in commercial real estate. My grandfather was in commercial real estate. So basically, it means I'm in commercial real estate. He had a small brokerage shop. When the market turned in the late 80s, he got into property management. And so for the past 20, 30 years, I've held almost every position in commercial real estate. I've leased it. I've managed it. I've sold it. I've invested in it. I've raised equity for it, debt, you name it. It's sort of, it's been in my blood.
Can you tell us a little about the story behind 30 Capital and the entrepreneurial path that led you to start it?
Sure. Well, you know, it's funny because 30 Capital is sort of an evolution. I think it's funny because people talk about entrepreneurial spirit and stuff, but 30 Capital really started when I created my first business, which was known as DeFees with Ease. It's one of the largest providers of DeFees and services in the country. But when I first started that business, we were singularly focused on defeasance. Well, then when hedging came along, well, I couldn't just call us, I had a defeasance business. I needed to do hedging. So I needed to add to it. So 30 Capital has basically become the holding company of all these businesses that we've created over the last 20 some odd years, some newer, some older, that represent sort of a collective grouping of real estate advisory and investment companies.
Who were some of your mentors along the way, and how did they help shape your career path, either early on or later in your career?
Yeah, I think obviously my dad played a huge part of this, right? It's hard not to give him a lot of credit for it, and he will take all the credit for it. Growing up with him and learning what he did to not only stay ahead of the curve in commercial real estate, but also be innovative himself. He was really a true mentor for me. I think there's also a lot of people that really shaped my life. There was Tom Hyland, who was at the time was a young loan officer at PNC and actually Mid-Atlantic National Bank when I was my first job out of school. And he really helped to help me develop some technical skills. And there's people like Mark Feinerman, who is with Jefferies Loan Corps, who's really helped me. So there's so many people along the way. I could spend a whole podcast thanking everybody who's helped me get to the point where I am today.
I'd love to hear some of those early lessons from your dad that became invaluable going forward. Can you share maybe a story or, you know, something that you may have, you know, watched him do and, you know, really kind of shaped you?
Sure. Well, my dad is a voracious learner, a voracious reader. I've never seen somebody consume as much information as he does. And that was one of the things that was early instilled on me and something that I still have to this day. And it's not just about commercial real estate. It's about learning things that are whatever piques your interest. And that's really what's been very valuable to me is applying things that I've learned that are outside of commercial real estate and learning these things and applying them back into commercial real estate.
Do you have any favorite mistakes or moments that course corrected you onto your current path that maybe at the time you didn't recognize were opportunities?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you know, well before your time, but back in late 99, early 2000, the CMBS market, the commercial mortgage-backed security market, was very new, very early on. And there was this prepayment provision called defeasance in the loan documents. And believe it or not, at the end of 1999 and early 2000, nobody had ever done a defeasance. And talk about being in the right place at the right time. Earlier in my career, I worked on Wall Street, working in with these securitized lenders, bundling up mortgages and selling them off. And the prepayment provision for us at the time was this defeasance. But quite frankly, I can say it now, I had no idea what it was when I was doing this. But lo and behold, in somewhere around late 99, I get a call from a borrower who had tracked me down from Deutsche Bank, you know, from Lehman Brothers to Credit Suisse to Deutsche Bank, and called me up. And he said, "Listen, you put me in this loan. It's got this defeasance provision in it. I've asked. I called up my loan servicer. He said I can't get out of this loan." I said, "Oh, you must be mistaken. Let's get on a call. Let's call the loan servicer." And the loan servicer basically said the same thing. He said, "Listen, these loans, nobody knows how to do it. Nobody knows what they're doing. These loans are not meant to be repaid. You're going to have to just deal with it." This borrower was going to have a big transaction. He was going to make a good chunk of money off of a trade. And he's like, "This is unacceptable. You figure out how to get this. You figure out how to get me out of this, or get ready to be deposed because I'm going to sue you and everybody you've ever worked for." At that point, the aha moment came out where I said, "You know what? There could be a market here, because all of these loans that have defeasance and all these securitized loans will need somebody to be able to do this process, this transaction, this complex transaction of doing a defeasance." And we did it.
Wow. Talk about being at the right place at the right time. Although, you know, I'm sure most people don't want to have to, you know, face the threat of a lawsuit to have their aha moment. You know, sometimes that pressure kind of, you know, puts you on the spot and really makes you get creative and figure things out.
Well, when you're 29 years old, it sure does.
Could you share with us, what are some fundamental tenets of your work ethic that you maintain today? Daily habits, practices that have become essential to your career?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, as I've gotten older and I actually like to disperse my time a little bit more. I found that I am not the sole purpose machine like I used to be. I actually really enjoy things outside of just the office, outside of just work. So writing is one thing, not just business books, but I also enjoy writing and writing other types of books. I enjoy farming. I enjoy hiking. So I'm enjoying a lot of things. But I think for the most part, my daily tasks and what I try to stay online is I try to get some free time in the morning to study and read, try to get all my calls done in the morning, try to really prioritize what I need to do, and then spend the rest of the day sort of expanding my horizon, expanding my mind, and really trying to be more open. And that's been a really big help for me. And that, quite frankly, that's because of COVID, right? So when you're not at an office all day, doing that is being beneficial. You start to get a lot of other interests.
Well, let's dive into today's topic and talk about innovation in commercial real estate and future-proofing companies for success. You know, to start this off, tell us about your new book. What's it about? Who's it for? And why write this book today?
Sure. Well, the book is called Beyond the Building, and I'm happy to say it just received the Wall Street Journal bestsellers list.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And I wrote this book for commercial real estate owner and operators and investors. And it was really focused on, it was almost a summary of companies that I've worked with, things that I've seen in my past, you know, 20 some odd years of not only being in the capital market space, but also in the technology space, the asset management space, and also as a principal and an investor in commercial real estate. And I really felt like there's so many books out there and so many things out there about investing in real estate. And I think that's great when you have a market like we've had in the last, you know, 15 years where you buy it and it goes up and, you know, everything's great. But when markets shift, and they ultimately do, there needs to be a playbook, a handbook that will help companies navigate this transition of what's going on. And so I wrote the book to help companies think less like a real estate company and more like a innovative technology company whose product is real estate, pulling from these great companies that have done incredibly well in all times, the Apples, the Googles, and just applying some of the things that we use as a technology company or inside of some of our businesses that sell software, utilizing some of the best practices we have there and applying it to our real estate business has created incredible returns for us.
What would you say are the main takeaways you want readers to get from your book after reading it?
Innovate or die, right? I mean, that's and I know that's obviously cliche and is overused, but in reality, people have to start thinking differently, right? And I think what we're starting to see now is if you want to create real enterprise value in your business and you want to spot opportunities and you really want to differentiate yourself in the market, you have to do things differently. And that can apply to any business. But in reality, in commercial real estate, when you think about it, what do we do as a business? If we're an investor, we go out, in many cases, we go raise money from investors and we go and buy real estate. And then we sell real estate and distribute the returns. If we're in the services side, we have to go out there and say, hey, you want to use us. How do we differentiate ourselves? And that's what this book is really about, is utilizing innovation. And it's not just technology, but utilizing innovation to truly differentiate yourself, create real enterprise value for yourself and for your firm, and be able to spot trends that are clear if you apply these principles.
From your experience creating and selling several companies, what does innovation mean to you, and how can commercial real estate companies think about being innovated in today's market?
Yeah, well, innovation to me means doing something different, and that's as simple as it is. And it's not just technology. It's not just, you know, it's just thinking about things differently. And for commercial real estate, I think doing that is there are several things that real estate firms can do that are innovative, but sort of copying from other businesses, right? And we've been slow but sure doing that, right? And 10 years ago, you know, you weren't seeing Google AdWords and on apartment complexes, right? And then all of a sudden, now it's normal. You weren't AI. You know, that was never, you wouldn't do that. But now you call a leasing office and you're getting AI. So slowly but surely, we are becoming innovative to achieve our business goals. But from a real estate shop, you've got to think bigger. You have to think corporate-wide. How do I change my business to be an innovative technology company whose product is real estate?
So in a more scrutinizing market, how do investors, brokers, and other commercial real estate stakeholders convince their clients that their service is a necessity?
Yeah, this is, I actually have a chapter in this, and this is knowing your customer. Right. And this comes from, you know, this is marketing 101 in new days, which is personas, knowing the wants, the needs, and the fears of your customer. And your customer, by the way, isn't just, you know, it's not your typical, right? If you think about a commercial real estate firm, an owner and operator, well, who's your investor? Well, who are your customers? Your customers are obviously your investors. They're your tenants or your residents. They're the brokers that find you deals. They're the brokers that help you raise capital. They're the, you know, and so all of these people are your customer. And in order to successfully differentiate yourself and to successfully engage with them, you need to understand them as a as a customer and their wants, their needs, and their fears. And so I think from a real estate perspective and from a service provider to a owner operator, it's the same thing. Know your customer, know their wants, needs, and fears.
Now, regarding technology, how do commercial real estate stakeholders evaluate what tools add crucial value to their operations versus what's just fluff, what's unnecessary, or, you know, how do you get down to the brass tacks of, you know, I need this versus, you know, this would be nice to have, but it doesn't really add to my bottom line?
Yeah, that's a great question. If I knew that all the time, I would, you know, I'd be sitting on top of the world, right? That is a challenge, right? Because people build software because they believe that there's a need. It fits a need and there's a use for it. The hard part, the difficult part is making sure you can message that to the right stakeholder in an organization, and that right stakeholder is a decision maker. And that's sort of the challenge, right? And I think it's no different than if you're a mortgage broker and you're trying to sell capital to a person, why do they use you? Is it, what do you do that's more valuable than the person next to you? I think technology has a difficult rap sometimes because software companies are typically startups, right? That's sort of the name of the game. You've got to be innovative. You've got to think of things that are from scratch. You create something, deliver it into the market, work on it, iterate on it. It's like a development project that never ends. So it's hard to try to identify what's the right fit for the right person. It also matters on time. And it depends also on the thought process of the organization. If the organization is innovative and forward-thinking and thinking about how they're going to really create enterprise value and they're really going to be here for the next generation, then the technology and innovation conversation becomes very different. If they're like, hey, I'm great, I'm wonderful, I can buy a property today and, you know, rents are going to go up and I'm going to be able to sell it, I'm going to be wonderful, then, you know, then maybe they won't make that investment. But those are also the companies right now that are struggling. The ones who have made an investment in the last few years on cash flow and operations and asset management are the ones who are benefiting from these investments. Whereas now all the others who never really thought about that and thought they were wonderful because they were just buying and everybody was making money, that they didn't need to make that investment.
Just playing devil's advocate here. What would you say to somebody that says, hey, you know, we don't want to get our focus too diluted across, you know, trying to, you know, get involved with tech. We really want to focus on our core business. You know, why do you think that might be a mistake?
Well, because I think I go back to that saying, which I've had before. What is your core business, right? Your core business is a company whose product is real estate. So you think about this, think about it, and you can go to almost any analogy, right? And sort of put this back into perspective. Look at Domino's, right? Domino's would never tell you they're a pizza company. They are a technology company whose product is pizza, right? You go to, look at Netflix, right? Netflix is a technology company whose product is entertainment. Blockbuster was a movie rental company, right? And so that's where you start to see the differences. And so I think a real estate company, and yes, it is, I'm in a very advantageous position. I've been in technology, I've built software companies, I've sold software companies, also in real estate. So I come from it, it's a little bit easier for me to sort of figure out what's real and what's vaporware. But ultimately, if you're a real estate organization, you stay core to your business. It's utilizing technology and innovation to be better at that job, period. And if it doesn't work, if it's not adding, if you can't see that it adds real return for you, don't do it. Don't do it. And we tell our salespeople, you call, you make the pitch. If we ask questions, if these are your needs, and if we can apply and we can cover your needs, then it's a great fit. If we can't do that for you, don't buy it. Last thing I want to do is try to put somebody into software that doesn't fit or it doesn't meet their goals.
Got it. Well, getting into the nuts and bolts of, you know, today in commercial real estate, you know, I'd love to ask more questions about the investment sales market.
Sure.
What's your 30 5,000 feet overview of the commercial real estate sector today. You know, what shifts are most worthy of attention in your opinion?
Where do you begin, right? You've got a 50 to 70% reduction in transaction volume. You've got banks that are holding on to debt that is non-performing and they can't sell. It's hard to get an equilibrium in the market, right? Because there's buyers, but not sellers at those prices, and no buyers at the prices sellers are willing to take. You've got inflation across the board. You've got interest rates that are incredibly high. You've got sort of tight lending parameters from before. It's a tough market. This is where this will separate the operators from the rest. And I think that's where cash flow management, operations, operational efficiency is going to be the difference. And I think I don't think there's a lot of real estate people who have been in multiple cycles that didn't see this coming. We couldn't specifically say when it's coming, but we knew it was coming.
Right. Well, now looking at, what's the same, right? You gave us a little bit of background on what's changed. What's staying the same? What's consistent that you can kind of hang your hat on and that, current stakeholders can learn from the past?
Well, I think it's the same thing that, well, here's the thing. I don't know if they can, if they can apply it now, but had they had learned from before, it's a good time to be liquid. It's a good time to have cash, right? Cash is king. And these transitions, there are never any greater times of a transfer of wealth than in these cycles when these market gyrations happen. And unfortunately, there's going to be winners and there's going to be losers. I've seen it since 1980-something where all the banks went out of business and people who had recourse loans were losing them. Doctors, attorneys, dentists, people who had money were buying assets at pennies on the dollar. Saw it back in 2007, 2008. Ones with the money were coming in and finding deals. So I think that's going to be that's obviously there. I think the right now, I think the most important thing is to look at asset optimization, debt optimization, and equity optimization. And by asset optimization, I mean, is it me or is it the market, right? It's very easy to sort of group yourself together saying, hey, you know what? Here's my property. My property's not doing great. It's because the market's not doing great. Well, fortunately, there's data and analytics out there right now that can determine whether or not that's actually true. So benchmarking your property would probably be one of the first things that I would do, is to benchmark your property relative to operations, relative to your competitive set in your market. Then do I need to improve or is it really the market?
Right. You have any surprising or controversial thoughts about the current market and happenings that you'd like to share?
I think the return to work will actually be less of a factor as we go forward. And this is, I think as time will tell, but I am not as negative on office as many people. I think that, I think people will look, granted, it won't be a full 9 to 5, 5 days a week, but I think office will be back in favor in a couple of years. I also think that there's, time for borrowers to look and match forward curves, basically forecasting forward interest rates, matching it with their pro forma, what they feel the property is going to do, to really try to match that asset optimization with debt optimization. Trying to figure out do you have the right leverage and the right leverage coverage for your potential property going forward.
What advice would you give commercial real estate professionals as they navigate the shifting market landscapes right now?
Question everything, study everything. And I come back to this, it's old fashioned, but cash is king. Cash flow, cash flow, cash flow. Understand that cash flow, forecast that cash flow, understand your operations, forecast the worst situation, forecast the best situation, but be prepared to make your money in operations.
Got it. Well, given your technical background and experience, I'm sure our listeners would be curious to hear your answers about a few rapid-fire questions that we've got prepared. Are you ready?
Sure.
All right. If you were given $50 million today and had to invest it immediately, what would your go-to asset type and location be? Why?
Just one type? Do I just get one type? One shot at
this? You get one shot. So you gotta buy it today.
$50 million, I would be in probably affordable workforce housing. And I would probably be on the eastern side of the country. And I would be between probably Virginia down through Tennessee, West Virginia, Kentucky, sort of the Appalachian area.
Can you unpack that answer a little bit for me and kind of give me the why you're picking that asset in those markets?
Sure. Well, one, from a climate standpoint, right, where there's no arguing what's going on, right? And so, and owning real estate and multi in Florida and in Texas, I know what my insurance bill has gone up, and not only that, but general inflation of people and everything. Also, we look at migratory patterns. So we are a data and analytics company. And so not only do we sell it off to our customers, but we also consume it ourselves. And so our data analysts, our data scientists, we're constantly tracking thousands of variables to determine what are the best markets for us. And we look at climate, we look at cost of living, we look at affordability, we look at quality of life, all of these other metrics that go into the scoring. And you find that area for us is meets all of the requirements that we weigh.
All right. So favorite tool or software you use on the job?
Well, that's so loaded. I'm almost embarrassed. So obviously our flagship product is Lobby CRE. It's a data and analytics, data management, asset management platform. We basically ingest all of our data, all of our operating data, all our financial data, all the debt data, all the interest rate models, all the benchmarks, all that stuff. And it helps us come up with solutions and be able to analyze and visualize our property. So think of it as it's my daily Bloomberg terminal, if you will. It's my Bloomberg, it's my Wall Street Journal, it's my everything just on real estate.
Nice. And then what is the most common misconception about your job or industry?
Well, I think it depends on which industry you talk about, right? So if it was when people think of me as in my real estate hat, it's like, oh, wow, it's great. It's wonderful. Yeah, you're just so lucky being in real estate. Not everybody knows how hard real estate is. I think the misconception is that this past performance in these last few years will equal future results. And that's not going to happen. As I said, and I'm very clear to, even if I have to offend people, there will be a big difference between the people who know how to operate business and others who can raise money. And that's going to be very apparent going forward. On the software side, it's the same thing. People think you build software and if somebody buys it, you're going to be worth, you get a 10 times, 100 times multiple on revenue. That's not the case either. So, I think it's managing expectations across the board is on both jobs.
Got it. Well, as we wrap up, any parting words you'd like to share with our audience?
Well, I think the big thing is really, once again, study, be familiar with industries outside of commercial real estate, expand your horizons, live a balanced life. I think that's my big thing now. I was just on a podcast earlier and I was talking about how it's important after all this, we work so hard to have some balance in your life. And having balance actually will re-energize you, rejuvenate you, and get you excited to keep going.
Well, thank you for joining us and sharing your insights. I know you're really busy, and we appreciate you spending the time to sit down with us.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And where can people find you online if they want to get in touch? Email, social media?
Yeah, so all of the above. The easiest way is obviously go to 30capital.com. That has all of our social connects. I'm on X, I'm on Instagram, all of those. So feel free to check and or always email me at rob.finlay@30capital.com.
Well, thank you, Rob. Thanks everyone for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure not to miss the next one. Visit go.crexi.com/podcast. That's go.crexi.com/podcast. and sign up to get the very next episode delivered straight to your inbox. You can also subscribe to the Crexie podcast on your favorite podcast app, or check out our YouTube channel at www.youtube.com/Crexie for video recordings of each episode. Goodbye, stay well, we'll see you next time.